Welcome to the May 5th Petroleum History Society luncheon. Good to see such a great turnout for today's talk. I'm Clint Tippett, president of the society, and I have a few introductory things to do before we get to David's talk here. First of all, you will have noticed out at the door there where Doug was taking the money that there was a pile of books about David's talk, about History of Schlumberger in Canada. Those books were kindly donated to the Petroleum History Society for resale, with the proceeds going to the society by Schlumberger. So we're very thankful to Schlumberger for that, and to David for setting that up for us. So that's a great contribution to the society. I don't really have a lot of announcements at this point. I would like at this point then to ask Charlene Dobmeier to come up. Charlene's most recently, from our point of view, been involved in the production of Bob Rintoul's book, and she's going to tell us about the process that one goes through and the opportunities that are there for writing a book and having it published and so on. So Charlene, if you'd like to come up.
Thanks very much. It's nice to see a lot of familiar faces here. Hi, Bob and David and Bob. My name's Charlene Dobmeier, and there's some flyers on your table if you're wondering, if you'd like a little more information about what myself and my colleagues do and what we can offer you. I've been publishing for a long, long time. I used to be the publisher of Fifth House Publishers here in Calgary up until about 2 years ago. The company was bought by company out of Toronto, and their focus on Western Canadian history has changed. So a few years ago I decided to launch an operation with a number of colleagues. It's sort of it's a loose association of professionals who can come together and produce books of the quality of any publisher in the country, and it really depends on what people are looking for. We're very dedicated to Western Canadian history and to oil patch history. And one of the things we can do, as we did with Bob's book, is help with the writing. Anything that people are looking for in terms of producing a book, whether it's design, editing, writing, printing, distribution, marketing, those are things we can help you with. And so my brochure explains a little bit of that. And even though we're all going crazy these days with the iPad and all sorts of e-books, I think there's really nothing that can supplant holding a book in your hand, such as the Schlumberger book, which is printed by Friesens, which is the company that I do most of my printing with. And the other folks I work with are David, who does, as I said, a lot of the writing, and various editors, designers, and largely with Friesens printing. So just a couple of the other books that I've been involved with lately are The Oil Sands with Gordon Kelly. Gordon, unfortunately, has been taken down with prostate cancer recently. For those of you who know him, you might want to give him a call and cheer him up a little bit. Another book that we've published in the last couple of years that you may have seen on the shelves is Canada Stonehenge by a University of Alberta professor. That's some groundbreaking history in Alberta. But I guess you may have noticed that there really isn't a lot of local history and Alberta history being published these days because of the way that publishing is changing. A lot of companies are being bought out by companies that are being bought out by other companies, and the focus on regional stories and local interest has really changed, which is one of the reasons that we started doing what we're doing. And my dream, I guess, is that someday, rather than relying on Canada Council grants or those sorts of things, that we will have enough people like yourselves who are interested in sponsoring projects, coming together and looking at what needs to be published and saying there are people who can do this, and pulling together a cadre of people who are interested in seeing these sorts of things happen. We've got incredible resources here at places like the Glenbow, and a lot of material that I think we'd all be very proud to see out there and to tell our own stories. So those are the sorts of things we do, and if you've got any questions about it, my contact information is on there. I'd be delighted to talk to you about it. I'll turn it over to David, who's done a history of Schlumberger, and back to Clint.
Thanks, Charlene. Certainly, if there's people in the crowd that that know of some good stories, or people that could tell some good stories that would potentially be able to use these services, we'd certainly encourage you to do so, and we can act as a bit of an intermediary if that's what it would take to do it. Okay, David, as we've heard, is going to talk to us today about Schlumberger. Before we get into that, I should note that I saw the quarterly profits of Schlumberger were down for the first part of the year, and I'm sure it's because of David's invoice.
For Shell didn't move.
Maybe it is expensive.
Okay, Calgary historian David Finch holds an MA in post-Confederation history from the University of Calgary. His abiding interests are in Turner Valley and in the social, political, economic, and environmental history of the oil industry in Western Canada. He is the author of at least 12 books, actually 27, certainly an inside joke, on various aspects of the history of the Canadian West, not just the oil industry, but lots of other aspects as well, and I should add, not just about the Canadian West either. He once fell out of a tree while canoeing, and he promises to tell us all about that in his introductory remarks. David.
I have another favorite river, and it's in southeastern British Columbia. It's called the Kootenay River. And we call it the poor man's Nahanni or the weekend Nahanni because it's only about 2.5-3 hours drive from here. And yet there's some wonderful canyons in there and some great class two and class three rapids, so it can be done in a weekend. But now, some of you have oil patch experience that includes shotguns and rifles as bear deterrents. Those of us of my age usually tend to put our food into barrels or some other bear-proof feature and try to keep them away from our camp. Certainly we don't take food into our tents like some people I know who then take their shotguns as well. And it's like, okay, so you have a bear in your tent and you want to start shooting. Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. But at one of the places that we camp one trip, I climbed up a tree and some people pushed up one end of a log to me, and when they got that up to me about 20 feet up in the air, I tied that end into the tree at a crotch in the branch, and then somebody else climbed up another tree and then we pushed the other end of that log up there so that we had a nice high bear pole. Now, those of you who know about bear poles know it's much harder to get the bears tied to the pole than it is your food. So you throw a rope over the bear pole, that was a joke, and then you pull on the rope and then your food hangs up there, and it's my wife calls it a bear piñata. It just makes it harder for the bears. But it was while coming down from that tree that I slipped and fell and I got a big gash in my cheek, and when I got to work on the Monday morning they said, "What happened to you?" And that's when I said I fell out of a tree while canoeing. So thank you for coming out today. It was a miserable, stormy day, and a day that I'm very glad not to have been canoeing. And before I get started on my comments, I'd like to recognize a couple people here who have worked for Schlumberger. Neil Collins, would you please stand up? He was a great informant in this book, and I thank you for coming out today. And you've been a member of the Petroleum History Society, haven't you?
No, I never.
Oh, well, then there's an opportunity for growth for the society. Thank you very much, Neil.
Was that a trick question?
No, it wasn't. I thought he was. I'm very sorry. And then we have Lindsay Snyder against the back wall. Can you stand up, Lindsay? She's with Shell now, unfortunately, but she used to be with Schlumberger. Thank you.
What?
Apparently, this young fellow yanked her in. Another huge oil gusher brought in at Turner Valley, the High River Times headline screamed in April 26, 1928. But who was there even to notice? A moose? A cow? What was going on in 1928? In the middle of that month, in the spring of 1928, a crew of men quietly slipped into Western Canada's first commercial oil field and began stringing cables for doing a survey for Imperial Oil. Quote, Royal Lake No. 8 oil well in Turner Valley blows in with flow of 17 million feet of gas, a big producer, another quote from that same day. We don't know if the foreigners even read the local newspapers that spring, summer, and fall as they labored in the oil field. Maybe they did. If they did, they would have read This is the third big well to be struck in this field. Royal Lake Number 4, the first big gas and naphtha well, has a flow of 19,000 cubic feet at present, carrying more than 6,000 barrels of 73 gravity naphtha per day. Dalhousie Number 1 has been producing about 260 barrels per day on one separator. So what was this crew doing in Alberta, this invisible crew? And I scoured the newspapers to see if there's any mention of them, but there isn't. What were they doing here? Who were they working for? What did they find? And what does any of this have to do with the history of Schlumberger in Canada? Well, the title of my talk may be giving it away, Schlumberger in Canada, a tale of unique challenges and opportunities. The exact details of what Schlumberger was doing in southern Alberta in 1928 are in the book, and you are all welcome to purchase a copy. Schlumberger, yeah. The money's going to Clint, to the Petroleum History Society. Schlumberger Canada has graciously donated a box of these books for the Petroleum History Society to sell for $10 a piece, and all the profits go to the Petroleum History Society. We want to make that very, very clear. This book cannot be purchased anywhere at any price, so no pressure if you want a copy. Although I hear that Schlumberger's salesmen and women are giving away copies. So what was Schlumberger doing in Turner Valley in 1928? In brief, Schlumberger's first oil field contract in Canada was for Imperial Oil, and it was doing a, quote, horizontal electrical exploration technique survey in Turner Valley. Now, most of you who know the Schlumberger story, and sure, get up and have some more sandwiches there, but that's fine. Most of you who know about Schlumberger probably think they're a downhole company. Well, they are now, but back in 1928, they were doing a surface resistivity mapping project. And I'm not even able to figure out how they got electricity for this project. And probably none of you even know about surface resistivity mapping. But on page 16 in the book, the details are there. From April until November 1st of 1928, the Schlumberger crew worked continuously. And they did 95 miles of measurements and 7,500 readings, covering about 9 square miles of territory. I know enough of you have got the book there. I'm just going to show you what this ended up looking like. So on page 16, you'll see at the bottom there, you'll see the maps of what this ended up looking like. So they were introducing electrical current in the middle of a string of wires, and then they were somehow collecting the information. Now this is almost Ouija board stuff, almost Mansfield oil and water finder stuff. However, there it is. There's some details of what those maps looked like, and they ran hundreds of these surveys all up and down the Turner Valley area, trying to find something. So the question, of course, is getting ahead of myself. December of 1928, in the final report, Eugene Leonardin wrote, Moreover, and this is explaining why they had to shut down for the year, heavy snowfalls had begun, making travel in the field slow and difficult. So by November, they were shut down. Did they find oil? Well, not really. And for those of you unfamiliar with who Leonardin was, in 1926, Marcel and Conrad Schlumberger created the company that has become today's Schlumberger company. And Eugene Leonardin was their first employee. They quickly dispatched him to North America, where he set up an office in New York City. And by the fall of 1927, he also had an office on Front Street in Toronto. And if you're in Canada looking for oil and gas work, who do you go after? Well, you go after Imperial Oil. And so that was where Leonardin got his first contract. According to his notes at the end of his survey of the report, he says, the survey was instrumental in, quote, the locating of a fault and the prolonging of the anticline towards the south. So as you know, towards the south end of Turner Valley in 1936, oil was discovered at another find. Not an Imperial Oil discovery, perhaps. It was still, but it still showed that Schlumberger was doing something, and perhaps it was a lucky guess, but oil was found further south in Turner Valley. That year, 1928, according to Ann Gruner, in her book about the history of Schlumberger called The Schlumberger Adventure, the brothers back in France questioned the effectiveness of the expensive North American operations and wondered whether or not they should call all their employees back to France, because this stuff going on in North America was just costing a lot of money. Leonardon quickly telegraphed home office and asking for a chance to prove that the company could be profitable in the new world. And here I quote, "Let us hold on for a year, or hold on for 6 months, but hold on. I think we're almost onto something," was his attitude. Finally, in January of 1929, Leonardon had proof. His 1928 balance sheet showed that the North American operations of Schlumberger had made a profit of $12,976, or about $160,000 in today's funds. So not an inconsiderable income. Not bad for an operation where only a few men served all the mining and oil and gas interests for a whole continent. And over the next 2 years, the company's operations in North America continued to grow. So, why is this important? Well, a few years ago when Schlumberger asked me to consider writing the history of its operations in Canada, it was dating itself back to 1949. So in time for last year, they wanted to have a 60th anniversary publication. Well, the reasons for this date are unclear, the 1949 date, because I've talked to employees, and Neil Collins here certainly has talked to employees who worked for Schlumberger in Calgary as early as 1946. But the closest we can establish is that one of the subsidiaries that Schlumberger purchased was formed in 1949, and for whatever reason, that's how Schlumberger started giving its date. But research is cumulative, and those of us who write about the patch contribute a little bit to the knowledge, and I'm always using his knowledge and his knowledge, and I have yet to use his knowledge. But in this case, it was Sandy Gow's monumental work, Roughnecks, Rock Bits, and Rigs, the Evolution of Oil Well Drilling Technology in Alberta, that pointed me in the direction of the Schlumberger contract in Turner Valley. And Imperial Oil's people right here in Calgary found parts of this 1928 report. It's interesting, Sandy Gow was allowed to look at one part of the report, and then when I asked them for that part, they said, "We can't find it, but we found this other part." Luckily, I was able to look at the final report. And we really appreciate their help. What else can I tell you about Schlumberger in Canada? Well, Schlumberger was either lucky or it was really good, because it happened to be that it worked on the discovery well at Leduc that came in 1947. And at the blowout in 1948, that really made everyone sit up and take notice when Atlantic No. 3 turned that farmer's field into a lake of oil. Schlumberger has also been busy in Saskatchewan and British Columbia, up into the Northwest Territories, offshore in all three directions, and in the oil sands. That was part of this that surprised me. It was involved in the oil sands quite early, and even for Shell Oil, although Clint still doesn't know what they were doing for Shell Oil, as Schlumberger.
Back then.
Back then, yes. Canadian Schlumberger crews have gone overseas, and our visitor Lindsay Snyder today is an example of that. She was telling me that she's gone to Mexico and several other companies while in Schlumberger's employ. And that's typical of what happens with Canadian companies and individuals during a downturn. Oftentimes our people go overseas to do work. And as a result, Schlumberger has played an important role in nearly every oil field in Canada, and those stories are in the book. Now, I'm not going to read from the book or tell you the stories in the book because, I mean, you've got the book, you can read that. But as you know, I'm always looking for more. And according to my research, Schlumberger has been a good citizen in many ways, sometimes even before it was required to be so by society standards or by the laws of the day. Examples include, in 1956, it started providing academic scholarships for the children of its employees. In 1970, it opened its own in-house university called the Edmonton Learning Center, and it opened another such place in 1983 in Airdrie. Now, although we hear about tragic deaths in the oil patch, like the men who were killed last week or 2 weeks ago in the Gulf, the single biggest source of death in the oil patch is not on the rig site or on the workplace site, but it's driving to work. And it's a real tragedy. And so in 1984, Schlumberger introduced something it called the Convincer. Has anybody ever heard of the Convincer? I know Neil has and Lindsay has. The Convincer was a trailer-mounted safety device. Let's say that. So the trailer would pull into a Schlumberger regional office and everybody would be told, okay, go out and ride the Convincer. And what it was a seat from a car with a seatbelt on it. And you'd climb onto the seat and you'd put the seatbelt on, just a lap belt to begin with. And then they'd say, okay, here we go. And then they would pull this seat on, mounted on rollers up an incline. And then when you were ready, they would let it go. And it would come down that incline and it would come to a complete stop, going 8 kilometers an hour, 5 miles an hour. And if you've ever had a head-on collision with anything that stops you at 5 miles an hour or 8 kilometers an hour, you know that's quite a stop. That was one of the things that Schlumberger did to convince its people to use their seatbelts. For many years now, Schlumberger has also limited the use of cell phones. If you're driving and drinking, it makes no sense. If you're driving and talking on the phone, regardless of what the Alberta politicians have said for many years, it still makes no sense. So, thankfully, we are now, decades later, catching up with what Schlumberger has known for many years. In 1999, Schlumberger launched a book program called Read On. And what they did was they hired a fellow in Red Deer to write some books, books that would interest teenagers. And they're books about hockey, fictional books about hockey events and hockey series and beating the Russians and all kinds of fun stuff like that. And that program is now called Literacy for Life, and it has distributed books to over 250,000 children in Canada. So a 250,000 kids get these interesting books to encourage them to read. The list goes on, and like I said, read the book if you want to know a little more. But Schlumberger is not a perfect company, and some of its less glamorous moments are mentioned in the book. And it has made mistakes, and it has learned from those lessons, which you would hope would be true for all of us. But I want to take you back to 1928 again. November 22nd, 1928, again the High River Times headline read, Ocalta oil well came in with a terrific force, 1,000 barrels of oil a day, largest producer in the world. Well, this shows you how Schlumberger was actually pretty near the thick of things early on in the history of the patch here in the Canadian West. And on the table in front of you, you'll see a, I apologize for the quality of the photocopy, but it is a news story from August of 1929 when Winston Churchill visited Western Canada. And because Turner Valley was so important, he actually went out there and he toured Turner Valley. And he actually was given a tour of the gas plant site. And then the mucky mucks of Imperial Oil fed him lunch. And he went on to buy shares in 3 Turner Valley oil companies in 1929, the year before. What's the year that comes after 1929? I want to hear it.
Depression.
The 1930, that's right. He ended up selling a bunch of his shares in 1933, and I've only just started working into that story, but I think there's quite an interesting story there. So, if it was important enough to con Winston Churchill out of his money, that wasn't in the script, was it? And others, it was pretty important in its time. Just how important? Well, the Canadian Society of Petroleum Geologists, at first called the Alberta Society, was formed in 1927, in part because of the activity going on in Turner Valley. The waste gas in Turner Valley prompted the creation of the ERCB in 1938. And APEGA, although it is broader than just oil and gas, it started in 1920, and the geologists and geophysicists there are part of the Turner Valley story as well. But The Winston Churchill story is the story for another day. I'll have to write it up. I'll have to write another book, if you'll let me, Clint, and maybe you'll invite me back to tell you about Winston Churchill's adventures in Western Canada. But let's look for a moment at the title of the book that Schlumberger commissioned. It's called From the Beginning, Schlumberger's History in the Canadian Oil and Gas Industry. I like the title because it does point to the fact that Schlumberger has been here a long time. It's been here since before 1949. It's been here since 1928, which is wonderful. And in the last few days while doing research for this talk, I found another article in the High River Times. And if you know Schlumberger, you know that its biggest competitor is Halliburton. And Halliburton claims to have been in Canada as of 1926. But in 1929, in the High River Times, under the oil news column, it says, "The Halliburton Oil Well Constructing Company are now permanently located close to the home well." The home well is south of Black Diamond. "A large machine shop has just been put up there by the local contractor, E.R. Kerrigan, I believe." So the jury is still out as to who was here first, Schlumberger or Halliburton, but I'll let you know if I find out anything else. Why is Schlumberger's story important today? Well, I think it's important for us in Canada to, from time to time, examine our history through the eyes of an outsider, of an outside company. It's easy for us to be insular, short-sighted, preoccupied with the booms and busts here in our province, with the royalties, with the competitiveness review. But the Schlumberger story in Canada helps us reflect back to a larger story and to a bigger story of the unique aspects of our physical environment, of our unusual political climate, the technological innovations the Canadians who worked for Schlumberger crafted to meet the challenges. And there are several examples of trucks and other pieces of equipment that were designed specifically because we needed something different here in Canada. And there is sadness, too, in this book. 10 Schlumberger employees died on the Ocean Ranger rig when it collapsed in 1982, and they were aged just 24 to 31 years. We did extend the invitation to the president of Schlumberger Canada to be here today, and he wasn't able to be with us, but he was scheduled to be on the Ocean Ranger that day. And by a scheduling conflict, he wasn't there. And today he is the man who leads the company. Schlumberger has been dominant by being excellent, by taking over other companies. That's always a good strategy. See somebody else doing a better job than you, then gobble them up. By constantly striving to improve and for knowing that bad times will follow the good. And this was interesting because during the course of writing this book, we went through that huge, huge boom a couple years ago, and then everything collapsed. But the past presidents that I talked to, and this is reflected in the book, they saw that big boom as being something completely unsustainable and shocking, and they made a plan to live through it. It seems obvious that bad times follow good, but not every company or every politician or every taxpayer or every investor or every citizen of this province remembers this home truth. Now, I'd like to show you two pictures from the book just as we end. On page 12, we've got a picture here of a wooden cable tool rig, and it's not probably a picture you've ever seen before, although it's very similar to other cable tool rig pictures. This is Royalite number 4. This is one of the few photographs that I've ever seen of that rig before it burnt down in November of 1924. There's lots of pictures out there of the well site after the explosion and the fire burnt it to the ground. But this has recently come to light, and there is a man, a driller, standing in there. It's right at the bottom of the rig. But this recently came to light because of the recent donation of the Imperial Oil Papers to the Glenbow. So that's a wonderful picture. But later on in the book, I'd like to draw your attention to the picture that's opposite page 74. And I'll show it to you and to the camera. What we have here is a fellow. His name is Andrew Gould, Chairman and Chief Executive Officer of Schlumberger Limited, the big international company. But as you'll see, he's out of focus. What's in focus is what he's holding in his hand, and it's a bottle of heavy oil. The label is clearly visible, and it warns us not to put it near heat or to breathe the vapors. This image was taken in 2005 when Mr. Gould was in Edmonton to open the Schlumberger Reservoirs Fluids Research Center. And it's a facility that had a similar facility mimic it or opened here in Calgary in 2008. Gould's presence in Alberta to help launch this Schlumberger Center is typical of the company's commitment to change. And in all the research I did, that seems to be one thing that it knows is continuous and challenging and offers opportunities, change. He and we recognize that we have used up all the easy to exploit oil, gas, and bitumen. The challenges we face ahead are steep. And here I'll quote him from 2005. And he's referring to this heavy oil center. And I quote, "The center will focus on applications for heavy oil, which is bound to represent an increasing share of our business as the oil and gas industry seeks to maintain or boost production levels by way of reservoirs that are increasingly technologically challenging." And truer words were not spoken. In 1928, Schlumberger slipped into Canada to do the work that needed to be done to help exploit Western Canada's first commercial oil field. Its history is still being made today.
Good. If you read the Schlumberger history, and there's one that was written in French.
Right.
That when Schlumberger was first started by the two brothers, one of them was actually a physicist, and I agree with what was said here that they explained this. Mm-hmm. Then they went on, and they got the idea that of doing the seismic or the reflection diffraction. If they would work horizontally, why not vertically? Mm-hmm. And they were from the eastern part of France, from Alsace-Lorraine. Mm-hmm. And there's some very small oil wells over there. And they were wondering at the time, nobody really knew where it was coming from. And they got the idea of actually going in and putting sondes down there, electrical sondes. Mm-hmm. And there's actually, I have a copy of it at home, 1983, 82, whenever it was, for the 50th anniversary of Schlumberger, the widow of the younger one, Conrad or Marcel, whatever, was still alive. And she came to Edmonton for the 50th anniversary. And everybody was given a copy of the original log, which was an SP log, that they went, you know, they just put a wire down the hole, and one guy was cranking it. And I think it was Leon Alain, who was the guy who was on the other end, and they'd come up and they'd hold it, they'd get a reading and make a circle on a graph, on a piece of graph paper. Mm-hmm. Then they came up and you can see it, it's all handwritten. Mm-hmm. But if you'll read the history of Schlumberger here in North America, they came here shortly after the company was incorporated, and they went to Texas and all that, and there, and in Texas they told them, this is all a bunch of crap, we don't believe in it. So they actually left North America and they went to Russia. Mm-hmm. And the Schlumberger actually got their foot into the oil industry in Russia. Mm-hmm. And it's after they did well in Russia, in the Siberian, or whatever oil fields there, that they came back prior to the war. And I don't know when they came back to Canada.
Mm-hmm. That comment is similar.